The FAA wants to fine U.S. Airways $5.4 million. It's already time to get the annual lesson on airfoils and frost. And even Bonanzas have a max gross takeoff weight for a reason. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. And if you filed a federal income tax extension back in April, thanks for taking your iPod along while you jog to the post office. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, October 15th, 2009. U.S. Airways has been given 30 days to respond to the FAA on a total of $5.4 million in proposed fines for allegedly operating 8 aircraft on more than 1,600 flights with conditions which violated airworthiness directives or the terms of the airline's own maintenance program. Among the AD issues were operation of an Embraer 190, for which an AD required action to prevent a cargo door from opening during flight, and operation of an A320, on which there was an AD for inspections for cracking on a landing gear part. The airline has 30 days to respond to the proposed civil penalty. Find more detail on the FAA allegations in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. Winter here in the Northern Hemisphere is still a couple months away on the calendar, but there's already been a couple feet of snow in some ski areas here in Utah. And one morning last week, it was double digits below 0 Fahrenheit in parts of Wyoming and Montana. The FAA has issued an information for operators advisory focusing on small accumulations of ice, snow, frost, and slush on aircraft surfaces and their effect on aircraft performance. If you allow accumulants to change the shape of that computer-optimized airfoil, all bets on performance expectations are off. This is one issue for which technology does not yet offer an automated solution. The FAA suggests detection of frost, snow, or ice by scraping a fingernail across airfoil surfaces. Consider the airfoil contaminated and remove the contamination prior to flight if any portion of the surface looks or feels any different than it does when dry, or when it's wet on an above-freezing day. The National Transportation Safety Board has released a preliminary report in the case of a Bonanza that couldn't get out of ground effect during a takeoff attempt from Fairmont, West Virginia, on September 19th. The plane overran the 2,800-foot runway after an aborted takeoff and hit an upward-sloping embankment. All 4 occupants were injured, 2 of them seriously. The board added up the weight of the aircraft, passengers, 40 pounds of baggage, and 70 gallons of fuel. The resulting 3,842 pounds is 192 over the data plate's max gross. The pilot told NTSB the plane got 6 feet off the runway but wouldn't climb, so he set it back down after using up 3/4 of the runway. Witnesses said the plane skidded from its touchdown point to the impact point, and investigators measured 450 feet of skid marks. All landing gear were separated and the engine torn from its mounts by the impact. The pilot also reported that his pre-flight calculations indicated the plane's load was within spec and laid part of the blame on the design of the airport. He had 3,900 hours logged at the time of the incident, 393 of those hours in type. A full report on probable cause is likely a year away. Find more detail in the text version of this story at aero-news.net. Up next on ANN, NBAA and NATA hold co-located shows to conserve expenses for members. NASA's Business Opportunities Expo is scheduled on NBAA's opening day next week. And why aren't environmentalists protesting the Essential Air Service? You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4 Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for October 15th. I'm Paul Plack. Next week is NBAA 2009 in Orlando, where the organization will combine its annual event with a small business aircraft program that was originally supposed to be its own separate show in San Diego. At the time the decision to combine them was announced, the National Business Aviation Association noted sensitivity to its members' needs to conserve their travel budgets during the recession. Now, NBAA and the National Air Transport Association are combining two more shows, and economics is again being mentioned as a factor. In this case, NATA's 2010 FBO Leadership Conference is scheduled for January 25th and 26th, with NBAA's Schedulers and Dispatchers Conference overlapping it on January 26th through the 29th in San Antonio, Texas. NBAA's Schedulers and Dispatchers Conference draws hundreds of exhibitors and attendance by a large number of NATA's FBO and airports members. NATA's FBO Leadership Conference was developed for leading executives and managers of fixed-base operations, many of whom would also be attending NBAA's conference. Registration has not been merged for the two shows. You still have to do that individually through each organization. NATA President James Coyne calls the collaboration, quote, a great opportunity to provide increased value for one of our core membership constituencies. NATA members know that the association has been pursuing alliances like this one, and we will continue to do so to fulfill our mission to help ensure the long-term economic success of our members, unquote. NBAA President Ed Bolin agrees, quote, in this turbulent economic climate, this plan will allow us to provide our association's members the networking, marketing, and educational opportunities they have come to expect in one place at one time, unquote. Central Florida is going to be a busy place next week. Tuesday is opening day of NBAA 2009 in Orlando, but a few miles east in Port Canaveral, it's also the only day of Business Opportunities Expo 2009. The event is sponsored by NASA and is intended to show business leaders more about government contracting and what local and national vendors have to offer. The annual trade show is co-sponsored by the 45th Space Wing and Canaveral Port Authority, and this will be its 20th year. More than 175 business and government exhibitors from across the nation will be showing off computer technology, engineering services, communication equipment and services, and construction and safety products, and more. You can find out more at www.expo.ksc.nasa.gov. We keep hearing there's a trillion-plus dollar federal deficit, and we keep hearing that we have to cut greenhouse gas emissions, but the U.S. Transportation Department keeps flying those empty turboprops on scheduled routes between cities too small to be viable for the airlines. Harrison, Hot Springs, El Dorado, and Jonesboro, Arkansas are the latest small cities to slurp from the trough called Essential Air Service. The DOT is subsidizing Seaport Airlines of Oregon to fly Pilatus PC-12s between each of those cities and Memphis International three times a day, each Sunday through Friday, regardless of how many seats are empty. All four cities have gone a year without airline service. The new EAS flights start on the 26th. The Essential Air Service started in the 1970s as a way to gain support for airline deregulation among lawmakers representing areas served by commercial flights that couldn't break even without price supports. Tickets are $29 or $49 one way on these new flights out of Arkansas with 3-week advance purchase. You can get details at www.seaportair.com. Still ahead, Boeing and the U.S. Air Force report more progress for the tactical laser weapon. Sikorsky S-92s used in the North Sea are turning up with gearbox cracks. And sleepless neighbors fight back against helicopters used to keep the frost off crops. You're listening to Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're going to fly in the soup, you got to have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, October 15th. I'm Paul Plack. the advanced tactical laser weapon being developed by Boeing and the U.S. Air Force is getting to the interesting part. The partners reported on the White Sands missile range on September 19th, they were able to aim the laser from a C-130 and use it to put a hole in the fender of an unoccupied vehicle moving under remote control on the ground. The great hope for the ATL, aside from its potential ability to take out an enemy missile at the speed of light, is its promise to become a system which can destroy, damage, or disable targets on a battlefield and in urban operations with little or no collateral damage. After 17 oil rig workers were lost in March in an accident involving a Sikorsky S-92 in Canada, a quarter of the S-92s used to ferry workers to and from North Sea oil rigs have been found to have cracked gearboxes, sparking an emergency investigation. The Canadian accident was traced to a different gearbox issue. The Daily Record of Scotland reports the cracks were first noticed during an inspection of an S-92 last week. Engineers from Sikorsky have been sent from the U.S. to help in the investigation. Jack Molloy, a spokesman for RMT, Great Britain's largest transport union, says it's unclear why the defects seem to be limited to helicopters working the North Sea oil rigs. Early speculation centers on the harsh environment. And finally today, an unnamed man in Blenheim, New Zealand, appeared in court in Wellington Monday after he allegedly threw a rock at a helicopter trying to protect a vineyard from frost, then shone a spotlight into the cockpit. The New Zealand Press Association reports the incident took place near Grasmere in Seddon just before 4 a.m. local time. The man was charged with endangering transport and resisting arrest. He didn't say why he attacked the helicopter, but it was flying low to the ground, loitering to mitigate frost, and it was 4 a.m. Police Sergeant Tony Yardley says the pilot was able to avoid the rock, but not the blinding light. He also says neighbors have threatened such action in the past, but this is the first time somebody's actually made good on those threats. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, the second part of my talk with EAA's Joe Norris about revised FAA guidance on enforcement of the 51% rule. Today's big question, if the new policy is such good news for builders, why is it also good news for the FAA? And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iPodder, Podcast Alley, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.